A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to the third episode of the Curzon podcast in Canterbury. I'm Helen Seymour, and I'm here with Sam.
Morning.
Hello, Sam. Hello. How are you?
Very well, thank you. This week we're talking about the film of the week is Spotlight, which was released on Friday. So as usual, we're going to be spending the next half an hour, 40 minutes talking about the film in all its details. Obviously, we'll get to a point and we'll start talking about third act stuff. So there'll be a spoiler warning there. But for now, let's dive straight in, shall we?
Should we do a quick sum up of the plot?
Yeah, a little bit of context. So Spotlight is about the real life case where reporters from the Boston Globe uncovered the scandal in the Catholic Church, where they were covering up histories of sex abuse against the children committed by the priests in the church. It took place, I think it's 2000, was it? 2000, 2001?
So we start the story in 2001, mm-hmm. And I think...
goes into 2000 and...
is it just a year?
Maybe? I think it may be a year or two. Yeah.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, so maybe just a little bit more weird context. The director of this, Tom McCarthy, who has made very good films. He did The Station Agent with Peter Dinklage and a film called Win Win with Paul Giamatti. But his last film before this was a film called The Cobbler.
With Adam Sandler.
And it's terrible. So it's so weird to go to this.
Is it about a shoemaker?
It's about a shoemaker who, whenever he puts on people's shoes, he becomes them.
Is that who Adam Sandler is?
Yes.
There's a big conspiracy about Adam Sandler. Do you know this?
Go ahead.
I can't remember it. That's not good. It's something about how... I know. That all the films that he makes, they're just huge like advertising things and all these like subtle...
That's not surprising.
There's a big like thing on YouTube that's not one of those horrendous conspiracy things. It's like film reviewers going through all of his films and just... I think it's on for like an hour. And they just... sorry, I've gone on to a huge... I don't really like Adam Sandler.
No, neither do I. No. That's why it's not surprising me that all these films are adverts.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So, yeah. So to go from that to this is really bizarre for a filmmaker because this is incredible. Like, I was speechless for a while, actually, when this finished, to be honest.
Me too.
Yeah. And it's not often, like, a film like this... because people, like, physical reactions to films usually comes from horror films. So, like, oh, it made me feel sick. I was trembling. I felt both of those in this. I was shaking with anger at one point.
Me too.
I felt this, like, sort of acidy bile feeling in my stomach. Uh-huh. It's like, oh, this is horrible. And yet it's all done without anything overly dramatic.
Yeah, so I think one of the best things about the film is it doesn't sensationalise
the story.
No, not
at all. Yeah.
It just tells the story as close to possible as how it actually
close to reality
of Spotlight, which are a sort of subgroup of the Boston Globe.
Yeah.
That's sort of their page is Spotlight, and they do these investigative stories.
Yeah.
And it's how they uncovered this huge corruption within the Catholic Church of priests abusing children. And then when they were found out, nothing was done about it. The priests were just moved on. Normally, bishops knew about it as well. And they would just move them to another district.
And the lawyers as well. There's this sort of there's almost two stories going on where you've got the corruption in the Catholic Church, and then on the other hand, the sort of how the lawyers dealt with this and how the lawyers actually often made money from this.
Yeah.
Which is quite sick as well.
Incredibly sick.
Yeah, it's by no means an easy film at all. So be warned. I mean, it's not, you don't see anything. It's kind of like a room, I guess.
Yeah.
And though it's just purely based on the subject matter, it's always going to be a hard film to swallow, I guess. But they get around that very well and very sensitively. And I think it's important that you really don't really see any priests. And you don't really hear from any priests. Because it's not about them. It's all about the victims and the abused. It's not about the abuser at all. They're almost irrelevant at the end.
Yeah. There's no kind of horrible flashbacks.
No.
That even show sort of suggestions of priests with children or anything like that. Despite that, it is a difficult watch because of the subject matter, and there are moments where they talk to the survivors
and they
of
do
abuse,
go into details.
And they go into detail. So obviously, like, a heads up, you might be talking about that. We should probably say, like, you might find that difficult.
Yeah,
maybe you've got kids about, like, just say
absolutely,
heads up. Yeah. Should we go into performances? Do a general kind of thing?
Yeah, should we just sort of do a general...
Yeah, because otherwise we're sort of...
Who's who and we're going to be talking about... There's a lot of actors in this, actually.
I sort of got a bit... lost at one, not lost, but just who is Robbie? Like, I know,
like, at one point at the start, they're like, oh, Robbie did a good speech. Yeah, and I was like, which one was Robbie? Is that Michael Keaton or is that the other guy? And
it's completely fine, and in the end, you totally
absolutely
like, not by the end.
And also, there's a couple of things like, John Slattery's character, he's the guy with the like shock white hair.
Yes,
I was like, what is his job? Like,
yeah,
because sometimes he was in charge of them. Obviously, after an hour, I was perfectly fine.
Yeah, but, and it's not... You can totally follow the story.
Oh, absolutely. It's
but
not
it's
confusing.
Just a lot of characters.
You're thrown into this world.
I did not want Margot Robbie in the bath, going back to The Big Short, to explain anything.
Yeah.
I didn't need any of
this
that.
This film did,
like,
not need Margot Robbie in the bath.
It's fine. But, yeah, so I did... There's just a lot of characters.
Yeah, loads. And it's a true, like, ensemble drama. There's not really a main character, I feel. It's very... equally dealt out to the main three or four.
Mm.
So on the Spotlight team, you have Mark Ruffalo, Michael Keaton, who's the head of the Spotlight team, Rachel McAdams, and a guy called Brian Darcy James, who you may know from the adverts as the guy with the moustache that you don't know, because that's what I sort of saw him as. I think he's a Broadway actor.
Okay.
So he's not really been in many films.
I didn't know who he
was. Yeah, I'm not familiar with him either. And then you have John Slattery, as I guess he's kind of like the features editor, maybe?
Yeah,
and
I
then,
think that's his job.
Liev Schreiber comes in at the beginning as the new editor-in-chief of the Boston Globe. And then you've also got Stanley Tucci, Billy Crudup. But yeah, so you've got all these big-name actors. None of them are trying to be sentimental or trying to have a big moment. There's not really what you'd call an Oscar moment.
No.
Because usually there's like an actor will have one scene where he gives a big monologue or a big showy scene where he breaks down and cries. And that doesn't really happen here.
No.
I mean, there's one little bit with Mark Ruffalo, but.
Which
not,
is great.
It's amazing. But,
it's over before it's even started.
Exactly. It's not really a big moment. It's handled very delicately.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's so good about this is a film to. Praise the actual Spotlight team, because it's completely based on a true story.
Yes.
The actual team won a Pulitzer Prize for their work, for the story. And also to highlight and give validation for those children who had been abused, not just in Boston, but all over.
Yeah, well,
all
at the
over.
End, this isn't a spoiler, at the end there's a list of all the churches where these cases were found.
Yeah,
and that's probably one of the worst moments of the film,
because
when you see how big this thing was.
Sickening, so sickening
it's
how
horrible.
Long it is. And you just
goes,
think that's the last bit.
It's so long you don't have time to read it all.
No.
That's how long the list is, which says a lot.
It's, it's just horrible. So that's what this film does, and this film isn't looking for praise from the Oscars.
No. It might, it
it's
certainly
got
will get
it,
it
yeah.
but it wasn't, it's not trying to get it.
That's not, So, and that's kind of what makes it such a good film.
Yeah. It's such a slow...
Because it's so moral as
yeah,
well.
It is
ethical.
Very moral, yeah. It's such a... It's a very slow burn as well. Like, they get the case at the beginning just because the new editor-in-chief, Liev Schreiber, has said, oh, I saw this article. There wasn't much time to write to it. And everyone else says, yeah, the case is done. Like, there's nothing... There's no more... There's no point investigating it further. And he says, well, maybe there is. Could you maybe look into it? And from there, it just balloons into something massive. And I loved that all four members of the Spotlight team had their own personal investment in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Rachel McAdams, her grandmother's Catholic, and there's a kind of tension there where she's like, oh, but my grandmother loves this. This is her life, and I'm about to destroy it, essentially. Mm-hmm. Mark Ruffalo, a lapsed Catholic. Brian D'Arcy James, his kid, only they don't go to Catholic church, but they live in a Catholic neighbourhood, mm-hmm. and he's actually quite close to one of the homes mm-hmm. of the potential abuser. And Michael Keaton has to hear he has more of a connection to the lawyers.
Yeah.
But there's still a sort of a personal connection that they all have with it, which is really nice, and it shows how it has affected them personally as well.
But it doesn't overplay that.
But yeah, not at all. It's not like it's a massive burden kind of thing. It's,
yeah.
It's still their job.
So ethical in how it tells the story as close to as possible. And there's a there's an article about the actual Spotlight.
Okay.
Crew who went into the set of their offices, and they were just blown away by how much detail there was. And each actor met with the person they were playing and started to pick up their mannerisms.
Okay.
And how they moved and how their own personal reactions to the case. So they really wanted to tell this story as closely as possible to what actually happened. And yeah, the guy just said, when I went into the film set office, it was just like walking back into the office, and his desk was so surreal because it was like there were pictures
his
of
desk.
Yeah, like exactly where the pictures of my kids were. Like, oh.
Yeah, so there's a lot of effort to make it as real as possible and to distance it from being a film. I think film's often seen as this thing where you have to use it, you have to make it look like, you have to be inventive with it and revolutionary and creative. Whereas this, I don't think that's always a good thing, and this really shows that. Like, they didn't, like, talking about The Big Short last week, this is a film that does not need any breaking the fourth wall, any kind of flashy editing. This just needs to tell the story as best it can, as simply, with as little, like, show business.
And it does that.
And it does that, and it really works. Like, this would not be the same film with another director, I think.
Yeah, it's an outstanding piece of work, really. Can I talk about the score?
Mm.
The score was by Howard Shore.
Howard Shore. Of Lord of the Rings fame.
Is he? I hate Lord of the Rings. He did Doubt, though, as well. Have
did
you
Doubt,
seen
which is,
Doubt
is, yeah,
a similar
Doubt's very
theme.
Good. Yeah.
Oh, Doubt is amazing. I loved Doubt. The score is one of the best things about this film for me.
Okay.
It's a similar... The music throughout is kind of similar. It's all piano music.
Yeah.
That sort of follows a similar tune, really. And they just use it so sparingly, but in moments that are really... They just slightly pick up the pace and just add tension. But what's so brilliant about the score is that I think I'm right in saying it's never used... or very rarely used over dialogue.
Mm.
And it's never used to add tension when they're talking about child abuse, because you don't need to add tension when you're talking about something as serious as that.
Yeah, it doesn't need it. You don't need to be... You don't need to tell the audience how to feel, because they should react as a human would to that. They don't need to be told, feel sad. They just do. Because it's
just
such a powerful...
Bare facts of the matter are told,
speak for themselves.
Without any huge piano score over the top of it. And that really blew me away, because so often in films, when it's a tense moment, there's music behind it, and that's great in some instances. But with a film like that, talking about such a serious subject that isn't talked about, that's the whole point of the thing. No one's talking about this. This is being hidden. To not use the music in those moments is as great as the moments when they do use
Definitely.
it. Just they kind of quite often use it when they're looking through files and things like that, just to pick up the pace and add that attention. Howard Shore said that he wanted to use piano music because he liked the idea of an instrument that was black and white being an instrument that told the story of a newspaper.
Oh, okay.
Like, the attention to detail is extraordinary.
Yeah, there's a lot of effort put in this film, I think.
Yeah, and it and really pays off.
Yeah, because it's so low-key. You wouldn't automatically think that, but it really is. And yeah, when I came in here, you said, oh, well, I love the music. And I remember thinking, I don't remember the music. Like, but just because that's the point, I guess, that the film wants you to take away the content. It wants you to think about the corruption in the Catholic Church. It doesn't want you to think, oh, the acting was great, or the music was outstanding. It doesn't want you to think that. It wants you to think about what the film's actually about.
Exactly.
Which is hugely important.
The score is just a beautiful companion to the quieter moments, and the dialogue speaks for itself.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a really amazing script, actually, as well. Because, like we said, we were never confused. They get across so clearly what they need to in every scene.
And there's no hyperbole.
No.
There's no sort of, oh my god, like huge, oh.
We're going to not go full spoiler, but maybe just slightly talk about the plot in detail.
This probably is a bit of a spoiler.
Let's throw the spoiler alert out now.
Let's throw it out there.
So when they find out, because at first they're talking, okay, we definitely have 7 priests in the Boston area that we know have abused children. That then quickly becomes 13. And for quite a while it's 13. And then suddenly there's the scene where they talk to the former priest who says, oh, I believe it to be around 90. And in most films, that would be a huge moment. Like, the score would build and they'd all be, no, 90. Oh my God, 90. And the camera would be zooming in all over the place. But this was, I mean, obviously it's a shock. They're like, oh my God, 90. But that's it. They have to then quickly still get on with their jobs, have to brush past that. There's no huge moment like that.
Because it's enough just to say there's 90 priests in the Boston area that have abused children. That's enough.
Absolutely.
And that's just in every moment where there's a revelation, they never build it up too much.
No.
It's always just the dialogue. And that just makes it such an outstanding film. And still so punch in the gut.
Yeah.
Difficult to watch.
Proper. It's a real gut punch. Absolutely. I think that, for me, the kind of standout actor was, I kept changing my mind about who I liked best.
Let's talk about your thoughts.
Well, obviously, Mark Ruffalo's the showiest, because he kind of has this, not a twitch, but he's kind of, you can tell he's playing a character.
Okay, yeah. I mean, He's kind of the jumpy journalist.
Yeah. He's very jumpy.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, yeah, okay, that's quite an interesting... And he has this funny haircut and he has the could have been any of us moment.
Which is
outstanding.
Incredible.
Like, really amazingly performed, this speech. But then Michael Keaton, very laid back, but always believable. Even Liev Schreiber, the editor-in-chief, who's kind of... barely has any lines, to be honest, and I think his facial expression never changes. It's so low key, but he was really convincing, I thought.
Yeah, I completely
as this kind of loner.
Yeah,
that was a really he's a really nice little character.
Yeah,
this sort of lonely guy is always in the office late, and he gets into all these, you know, he's the editor in chief of the Boston Globe. He's got an important job. He's goes to a lot of charity events, but he's still just very calm and very internal.
Mm.
And that was a really nice performance as well. It's a very internal film, I think. Rachel McAdams, very strong, interesting.
There's no weak players here. I really enjoyed Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Just every time he was on screen, I was really captivated. And his character is one of the main characters that gets the point across. Again, not too sort of overly done, but it gets the point across that it's not the victim's fault or it's not the survivor's fault.
Yeah.
That they were abused, and he has two moments where he has the bigger moment where he sort of says it could have been any one of us, and then he has another moment where he's talking to another person who went to the same high school as someone
yeah.
who was abused, and he has this great scene, which we're probably in huge spoiler territory Sorry. Now, but where he says, hey, did you play? What team did you play on?
Yeah.
And the guy, I can't remember what he says, but he plays on a sports team. And then Mark Ruffalo says, okay, well, the person who was abused played on the hockey team. And
that was Michael Keaton.
Was it Michael Keaton?
That bit was Michael Keaton. Sorry to interrupt you there.
I'm just praising Mark Ruffalo for something that Michael Keaton did.
Yeah. But both actors have those. Those are two great moments, actually. I was going to bring up the Michael Keaton part at the end. Where he talks, where he has this moment, this scene. It's kind of, and then he has the scene where he goes to his lawyer friend's house.
That's so good.
And then he has the list of names. And he, Michael Keaton says to the lawyer, he says, oh, basically, can you tick which names you know were abusing kids? And at first he's, no, get out of my house. And in the end he comes out, and he gets a pen, gets the paper, and he's, you don't see what he's doing, but he's ticking names off, whatever, and he gives it back, and he's circled every single name on the list.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that was great. Like, in a sort of horrific way, but just really great drama.
Mm.
Also loved the scene where you've got kind of two scenes interwoven, where Rachel McAdams is meeting one abused victim, and then Mark Ruffalo is talking to another with Stanley Tucci, and they're sort of... And like we said earlier, there's...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No music. So it's just one scene to the other. Usually in these sort of montage-y scenes, there's a sort of building of tension, building of music. But here there's, it's literally just, he said this, she said that, he said this, he said this. And it's done really well. And it's a really nice way to get those two stories across without them just being repetitive, I felt. Having them both at the same time.
Yeah.
Which was really impressive.
Really impressive in how it portrays the survivors.
Yeah.
And just never making it so that they are sensationalised.
Yeah, it could have been very easy to make them all broken people and all completely. I mean, obviously their lives are, you know, not destroyed, but their lives are deeply affected by this. But
in part because they've had to hide it.
Yeah.
That's what's so...
But what was nice was they are... One of the guys is like, oh, my wife and kids don't know. I don't want my name sort of thing. But they are normal people.
Mm.
They're not... Because, I mean, there is the first guy. I think his name is Phil Salviano.
Yes.
He's
played by Neil Huff.
Yeah. He is kind of... He's come to the Globe before and has given them all this information, and he said, oh, last time everyone shot me down. And then even John Slattery's character said, Salviano, oh, he's like a... He's a fruitcake. He's crazy. We can't deal with him. He's a conspiracy theorist, etc. And that's kind of... I feel a slightly existing preconception about abused victims, that they're all emotionally severely damaged and can't lead normal lives.
Yeah.
Whereas this shows actually it's not the case, and it actually happens to more people than I think we think. So in that sense, that's handled very delicately and sensitively.
Yeah, that was another one that so Neil Huff met with the real life.
Okay.
And sort of spoke to him about his role in the story and stuff. I don't know. I couldn't find out whether every survivor that's featured
was a real character, was a real person,
or if they met, I couldn't find that out. But definitely Phil Saviano, who is the first key person who
came forward.
They talked to, yeah.
Okay.
I know that they met. And
yeah. I think I now really want this film to win Best Picture, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because for a while I was thinking, I want The Revenant to win. But now I'm thinking, I kind of think Spotlight is more important. It's more important that this kind of film wins. That where instead of a car chase, there's people looking through filing cabinets. The most like action-packed scene is when Mark Ruffalo is trying to get to the courthouse in time to get some documents.
Yeah.
Which is dramatic. You know, you don't need high tension to make that a great scene, to make that a great dramatic scene. So I really hope this wins. The only actor that's... I think Rachel McAdams and Mark Ruffalo are nominated in supporting roles. Kind of wish they all were nominated, to be honest. It won Best Ensemble at the Screen Actors Guild Awards.
That's a good shout.
Which is a very... Yeah.
Yeah.
It was up against The Big Short.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought The Big Short would win, but it's got to be Spotlight now.
Yeah.
This completely blows Big Short out of the water for me.
Oh.
Like...
Yes. I mean, they're both two films about corruption,
exactly,
in a big way.
Yeah.
But I would take the way that Spotlight's dealt with it any day.
It's sort of made with an invisible eye, like the camera. You never think you're watching a film. You're completely involved in the verisimilitude of the film. Big words there.
Big words from Sam.
Do you have any kind of negative criticism towards the film at all? Is there any little niggling point you think that if they did...
Sam, I noticed a continuity error.
Oh, no. Go on.
And as soon as I saw it, I was annoyed.
Go on.
It's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
You know when... I'm a bit worried to say this, because now anyone who sees it will just look at that scene, but I'm going to say it. You know, it's the classic thing of when an actor is making notes, talking to someone, and then obviously it hasn't been filmed in sequence, or they've taken different shots, and the writing on the page...
Changes
from a full page to a blank page, to half a page, to a page that's been turned over. And the minute I saw it, I was just like... In a film that pays such attention to detail, that little bit just... I know I sound like Robert Webb.
But that's
the only thing that I could find. I think you're probably going to say something.
Thing is nothing, like, I generally wouldn't change this film at all, but I think...
Even now I've told you about the notepad.
Even the notepad. Obviously changed the notepad. But I thought... Maybe if someone had a gun to my head and said, you have to find a bad thing about this film, I'd say maybe I want a little bit more of the aftermath.
Actually, lots of survivors of abuse who've seen this film said that that's a really important story that needs telling.
Yeah.
But it's needed for a different film.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I think that would add another 10-15 minutes to a, you know, 2-hour film or so.
And the aftermath is ongoing as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's still going on. I just make, because they print the article, it's released, you see them reading it, but you don't, I guess I expected, and maybe this is just because it's a more conventional way to end it, you'd see the victims they were talking to read the paper as well. But I guess that, because it's more about the Spotlight team.
Yeah, so I think the film's called Spotlight, and it is
needs
about
to focus on them a
bit
more. But I guess I expected one more thing from the Catholic Church, or one more thing, or like someone from the Catholic Church saying, "Oh, you're not going to get over this," or something like that.
Mm.
It doesn't need it, but I expected one more thing.
Yeah,
and then you have got the text at the end, how they wrote 600 more articles about abuse in the Catholic Church. Another thing: the setting and the way they filmed Boston was amazing, because Boston is really overused in film.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got things like it's always used to tell a crime story as well.
Yes,
so Black Mass recently, The Town, The Departed, all of these usually Ben Affleck films, but and it's all like, Irish gangsters and talking about, no, you don't say that to a Southie, and all that kind of stuff. And it was really nice to show the fact that it's actually a heavy Catholic family city, which is often sort of pushed to the side and just used for crime. So that was really a nice, obviously it's a real story, but it's a great setting for this story, a heavy Catholic town.
One of my favourite scenes was, and it really showed, I think, the setting well, was when one of the journalists discovers that they live nearby to a house that's being used to...
like a rehabilitation centre.
Is that what they call it? Sort of like rehab?
Kind of
for
paedophile priests.
Yeah. And he jogs from his home to the place.
Yeah.
And just, it's at night time, and the way it's done is so creepy. But all it is a man running to a house that's got the shutters drawn.
I loved it when he takes a picture of it, sticks it on the fridge, and writes a note, kids, stay away from this house.
Yeah.
And any men you see, you buy it, sort of thing. Which is another way of shows how the case is almost personal to him in that respect.
Mm.
And I also loved it when the article's printed, he gets the paper and slams it on their doorstep.
Yeah.
As if, we got you.
And that's actually the only moment, and you don't even really see his face doing that in a kind of like, yes way. Because again, this isn't a film where there are winners.
No. I think I said earlier something, when they win, I may have said that.
Yeah, you did.
But
yeah.
That's not the right word to use at all.
Yeah.
Because they don't win. This is just the first step. I mean, the fact that this happened over 10 years ago now, it's still going on. It's still very real. It's quite mind-blowing, really.
And also, the Globe has shortcomings too, because it didn't print an earlier story.
That's an interesting little, almost subplot, where there's a kind of, not a mystery, but a kind of, there's hints that they've either contributed to brushing this under the rug in the past. And for a while, I was like, oh, it's definitely John Slattery's character.
Mm.
But it turns out it was Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Who was the one. He says, I don't even remember doing it, but I got people to write a sort of mini column about it, and then I was done with it. And that was interesting as well.
And it was kind of explained by, I didn't want to think about it.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's how he said. I mean, he said he didn't remember, but he says kind of the whole thing was... It's like there's too many people in the world who don't want to think about this type of thing. Mm. And because people just don't want to think about it, it gets hidden.
Yeah.
One of the lines that has been quoted a lot from the film, which really sort of is a great line. If it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a village to abuse one. Child.
Yeah. That's Stanley Tucci's character, I think, has that line,
Who's brilliant.
He's really good, isn't he?
Yeah.
And a nice sort of... prickly, not oddball, but compared to the other people, slightly eccentric, I guess, and slightly...
Well, if you compare Stanley's character... Now, remind me of the name of the lawyer who's in the big glass
That's
building.
That's Billy Crudup, or Crudup, the actor.
Let's call him Billy.
Billy?
Billy and Stanley, right? They're both lawyers.
Yeah, polar opposites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love the way that they are first introduced.
At the same time, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. But Billy is shown in his office with a big glass thing behind him.
With the skyline of Boston.
He sits in a chair next to the journalist. He's very open in his body language. Mm. Okay, so his whole scene is kind of like, I'm really open, I've got nothing to hide, like the glass, right? And then you go to Stanley, who is... first introduced by shouting and not wanting to be seen, and his office is a desk filled with papers and papers
files,
so much that you hardly even see his face,
and I don't think there's any natural light either.
And I loved the way they've done
that's really clever,
both the offices and first impressions, and how actually it's the one in the big glass office that's got something to hide, and Stanley's character is the one who's really got a heart.
Yeah. And it was funny that with Billy Crudup's character, that for a while he was kind of a villain-ish, like he was sort of evil lawyer. But then it's when he has a sort of redemptive moment when he says, I sent these names to you 5 years ago and you turned me down, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which that actually was a big surprise to me.
Me too.
Because from all the trailers, I thought, oh, he's going to be the main antagonist, effectively, of the film, and the one that's trying to sort of block this all. But actually, he helps them in effect, in a way.
However,
I mean, obviously, he is still not the nicest of characters. No, but
I did think that was kind of like
just to get them off his back,
The idea of if you say something once, that's enough.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
And in a case like this, it's never enough to say something once if you're not listened to. If he genuinely cared,
he would have told them the first time they saw him and gave it to them again.
And I thought that was a good kind of moral thing of just because you've told one... If you're in a position of power,
a good thing once and nothing's happened of it doesn't mean, right, that's the burden off me.
Because there's lots of things about... So the first scene of the film, actually, we haven't even talked about, because the very first scene is back in the 70s. And it's a bishop, I think. Bishops?
Yeah.
Or priests, with a family, and they're saying...
In a police station.
And they're saying, this never happens.
Mm.
I'm going to take him straight off.
Remove him from the parish.
Yeah, this is like a once in a blue moon situation. I'm really sorry, but, you know. And it's so chilling.
That's a great opener as well.
It's a great opener. Yeah. And it is that feeling of the parents and the children, or the children, when you're a child, you have so many, there are so many people around you who are in positions of power. There's your parents, then there's the church, there's the police, and all of those people need to shout for their children, and if they're not listened to, shout louder.
There's also a good moment where they're interviewing a potential victim, and when he says something like, oh, the priest came round, and etc., and the reporter asks, oh, what did your mum do? And he says, my mum put cookies out.
Yeah.
Because obviously this is a heavy Catholic... And they talk a lot about how the priest coming into your house was like God coming into your house.
Yeah.
They're treated with so much respect, and they're so holy, and you have to treat them as such in these working class Catholic families. So it's absolute abuse of power. And another great line, I think, is when Phil Saviano says, it's not just physical abuse, it's abuse of your faith.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect. Because you're obviously completely shaken. You never trust a priest again, will you? So, to wrap up, any final points you wish to add?
Yes. Did you see, this is just kind of a tangent, but it's on a similar thing. Did you see Derren Brown on TV?
Recently?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so he did this show called The Push.
Yes.
You're going to wonder where I'm going with this. But it's all about how when you are met with someone who's in a position of power, you go along with it.
Okay.
So it's about this... they kind of set up this guy and it escalates to the point that an actor who he thinks is a benefactor of a charity dies, and he's convinced to like hide the body.
Right.
And he's just an ordinary guy. But because of everything that's happened before, he feels vulnerable and like he needs to... He just goes along with it because of the position in power. And there was an experiment in the 60s, Stanley Milgram, who did a similar thing where he got people to press... they believed that someone was in another room wired up to electricity.
Right.
And they're in a separate room, and they are told to increase the volts of electricity that are going towards this person. And they can hear them screaming.
Wow.
With pain. And just because someone's in a white coat...
Telling them
you must continue with the experiment. And even when they try and stop, they say you must continue with the experiment. A ridiculous number of them carried all the way, even when the machine they were using said may cause death if you go to this many volts of electricity. And all of these things, I just wanted to bring it up because it says in the film, like, there's points when they're talking to the survivors and the survivors say, he asked me to do this act, and you're going to wonder why I did it, but I just did it because it's God.
Yeah.
And there are so many instances throughout history that have proved that humans will just
do as they're
cooperate
told. Yeah.
And do as they're told. And I think it's done really, really well in the film, but I wanted to bring up those two things just because I think there's so much guilt placed on the survivors for why they did it. And it's just shown throughout history that, especially when you're a vulnerable child, you do just do those things.
You do as you're told. You do what people that you have been brought up to believe are important. And you trust them, yeah.
You trust them. And James Rhodes as well did. He's a musician who was abused as a child at school.
Mm-hmm.
And another teacher walked in on it happening, but they didn't do anything.
Right, okay.
And he, for complicated reasons, he almost wasn't allowed to publish his autobiography. And it was a big, like, freedom of speech case. So I just wanted to bring up those things just in case anyone, like, listening or stuff, like, there are things out there that show that this happens to a lot of people and it's absolutely not your fault at all.
Definitely. There's a lot of, I think a lot of, in the film, the details the victims give, there's not much of that physical force against them.
Yeah.
They're just told to do things. And they often say, like you said, you're going to think, you're going to ask why I did it. And they almost can't explain why they did it because they're being manipulated. So, hugely important film. Definitely.
And Michael Keaton's character, this is what we were going to talk about, says, he's talking to someone and he says, oh, one of the coaches was a hockey coach. It's just lucky that you and me didn't play hockey.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of it could have been anyone.
Yeah. They all went to Catholic churches when they were young boys and girls. It's an important point in the film, actually, where it's not just
boys,
it's girls as well.
And they always refer to it as children rather than boys.
Definitely.
Which is really important.
Yeah. So, for me, this is a out-and-out 5-star film.
Mm-hmm.
No questions about it. It's already film of the year, I think, at the moment.
For you.
So far. I mean, it's very... we're only one month in, but I want to see it again.
I want to see it again.
I mean, it's
because
a hard watch,
so
but there's
much.
So much going on, and it's... I think it's really important to get everything from it.
Every scene has really been thought about, and I want to see all those scenes. And
definitely.
4.5.
Okay, not going 4 or 5. Interesting. So...
Really good film.
Yeah, you have to... I mean, it's... the film that everyone's talking about at the moment, and it's probably going to win Best Picture. That's the current odds.
I'm going five.
Yes, Helen. So thank you very much for listening. Next week will be a much lighter and fluffier topic. We'll be talking about Trumbo, starring Bryan Cranston as the blacklisted screenwriter.
Heisenberg is back.
Return of Walter White, absolutely. So that's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.